This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Brian Bates,
Billy Choate,
and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So welcome, Billy. Lovely to have you with us, and fantastic that you're given your time to tell us your story. And you've just been telling me you've spent your life from 4 years old as an education, which is definitely a passion of mine too. So let's go back, before we hear what you've been doing recently, let's go back to the beginning. Where were you born? Tell us a little bit about your early years.
I was born in October 1936. I'm a few months older than Brian, so I'm his boss. And my mum and dad were Keith and Flora, and I had an elder sister called Nolly, and she was nearly 4 years older than me. We first lived in a flat in a street called Cambridge Street, Gonville. My dad was a professional jockey, and he was the first professional jockey in Whanganui. And he and mum had moved out from Auckland, and they were both wanted away from their families,
right,
because of certain circumstances.
Right.
And so I went to school, first of all, at four at St. Peter's Kindergarten, which was attached to St. Peter's Church in Whanganui, which
right.
was an Anglican church.
Right.
Then at five, I went to Gonville School, and near the end of the war, my dad won a state house in Whanganui East.
Ah.
And we settled there, and we were the first people in that street called
right.
Walker Place.
Right.
So number 9 Walker Place became my home.
Right.
And from there, I went to Whanganui East Primary, and at secondary level, I had to move and go into town to Whanganui Technical College, which
right.
was a co-ed school.
Right. So you were growing up at a time through the Second World War
yes.
as well. So did that have a lot of impact on you growing up? Right.
No, because I think, if I worked it out, I was born in 36, I was only 9 when it finished.
Right, right, okay.
So we at school and at home, it was never talked about much.
Right, no. right, okay. Right. So you're at Technical College, Whanganui Technical College.
Yes.
And from there, did you, you were thinking about becoming a teacher or?
Not initially.
Right.
I need to explain that I was not a very good student. I was only interested in the outdoors. I played rugby, cricket, did athletics and rowing.
Mm-hmm.
And studying was the second option.
Right.
But I need to tell you a lovely little story of how my schooling changed. But first of all, the culture of the school was something I took on board.
Mm-hmm.
The school had a motto, Superenda Omnia Ferenda, Latin. And it means all is overcome by working. 'Tis our motto, prove it true. Do you part no duty shirking to proclaim the white and blue? And as first years, we all had to learn that, plus the school song.
This was Technical College.
Yes. Yeah. That made a big impression on me, but I still wasn't interested in studying, so I didn't get very good marks.
Mm-hmm.
And in my first year, I had an experience that changed me, really.
Mm-hmm.
In October of my first year at school, we had a tabloid athletic sports. I don't know if you know what they are, but it's doing everything in the opposite. So it was an inter-house event, mm-hmm. and they did things like standing long jump, throwing a tennis ball, and running backwards. And I ran backwards in my race, the under 14 race, and I won it.
Wow, good.
And our house teacher came up to me and he said, they called you by their Christian name, Choke. How come you can run so fast backwards and you're useless forwards? And he was right, because I never qualified for the athletics for my house in
right.
my age group.
Ah.
And I went away and I gave that a lot of thought. And this was in October, and I decided that if I could run, he was right.
Mm.
He was right. Mm. So I started training, and I used to go out after school and run around the roads in Warner East. And the next February, I trained all that time, and I qualified for the school championships.
Wow.
And 100, 200, and 400.
He'd be pretty chuffed, actually, wouldn't he, to see you doing that training.
Yeah. So, at this stage, I had thought a lot about why this happened to me, and I have decided that I'd like to show you this, because this is something I made, which I now show to students. Okay.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
It's all right. For the listeners, Billy's unravelling something which looks very, very interesting, a certificate.
Well, it's really stuck down. Oh, it's coming. Right, that's that one. Right, I'd like to show you this chart, because this is something I've used all my teaching career.
Right.
And because it pertains to me.
Mm. So it's coming.
Right, here we go.
Unraveling. So this says, when we are born, we all have a place in the world. What we do with that place is very important. We all have gifts and talents. When we discover them and use them, we gain confidence to be what we want to be. Very true, isn't it? Mm.
Yes.
Very true.
Yeah. It took me a long time. I don't think I analysed that till I was an adult. But as a child, I realised that I could do stuff that I didn't think I could do.
Mm.
And getting confidence in my athletics meant I got confidence in my study.
Yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
And that led me to study. But I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm.
Right.
Was there any topic that was you were drawn to that?
No.
Yeah, right.
Oh, sorry. My best topics were maths, geography, and history.
Mm.
And because my father was a jockey, I used, as a young boy, go to the races on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad used to go from New Plymouth to Wellington, and Mum went, and I accompanied them. So I sort of got this. A bit of geography in my blood, I suppose.
Right, yes.
Travel. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So,
Billy, can I interrupt?
Yes.
I'd love you to tell the listeners the story of when you were a little boy and you went into the commentator's box.
Oh, okay. I used to go to the races, and first of all, when I was young, I stayed with Mum all day, and then as I got a bit older, I wandered around the racetrack and into places like the jockey's room and what's called the bird cage, where the horses patrol.
Right.
And I got recognised as Keith Choate's son.
Right.
And Keith Choate made a friend of the announcer, and he said to me one day, "I've got something special for you. I want you to go upstairs with Mr. McDonald," was the announcer, "and you're allowed to watch the races from way up on top of the steward's stand."
Wow.
So I got there. I was only, I was 11,
mm.
and in this box was the announcer with a stand with the binoculars and a microphone on it,
mm-hmm.
the local reporter from the Whanganui Chronicle, and room for one more, and that was me. And I was warned that I was not to speak.
Right.
Right. Unfortunately, my father had chosen the wrong race because I was 11 years old and he never had a winner on the race course at Whanganui.
Right.
Halfway up the straight, he was three lengths in front. And someone yelled out, "Come on, Dad!" And of course, it went all over.
Yes, I bet everybody burst out laughing, didn't they?
Well, I did when I heard the story.
In the moment.
I love it.
Yes. And he won it.
He did.
So he broke his hoodoo. They, in Whanganui circles, they called that a hoodoo. But I never got an invite back upstairs.
Well, it was a lovely thing to say anyway, wasn't it?
Yes, so that's what Brian wanted me to do. Thank you, Brian.
A lovely story.
Going back to school, after 4 years at school, I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Mm.
My father had arranged for Christmas holiday work, first of all in the wool store and then the freezing works,
mm-hmm.
and I hated it.
Mm.
Boring. But I understood afterwards that the friends you make at high school can be your lifelong friends.
Yes, yes.
And Whanganui East was a special suburb in Whanganui because it's on that side of the river and everything else is almost on the other side. So my friends were, that I'm from Whanganui East, were a year older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I said, "What are you doing?" "Oh, we're applying for Teachers College." So little Billy went along. And I got accepted and moved to Christchurch to train.
Right.
For 2 years.
Christchurch Teachers College?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So after 2 years there at Teachers College, I was posted to a school on the Whanganui River called Upakanaro. And it was a four-teacher school. And it was on the Whanganui side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
But about 12 kilometres from the city.
Right.
A country school.
Just before you go there, in Teachers College, did it, I want to say, nourish you or feed, you know, were you pleased to have made that choice to go to Teachers College and journey into the teaching profession?
No, I didn't know what was ahead of me.
Right.
I was just wanted to be with my mates.
Right, okay. Good mates.
Teachers College in those days was just an extension of high school.
Right.
So we just went to lectures on history, geography, English, reading, things like that, PE, and it was just like being at Teachers College, except where the boys had to wear a tie.
Right, right.
And the girls had to dress in a dress.
To look professional.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so then we're back at
school. Of course, the thing that changed me was going out into schools as a student teacher and getting the chance to teach.
Mm.
And that really gave me a big push because it was exciting.
Yes.
Exciting to see kids learn and be active. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Apart from the PE, one of the PE tests was to use your skills to rescue someone who was drowning. And the practice was you had to tow someone across the baths. And I went with Tony this day, and he wasn't a very good swimmer. So I said, "Well, I'll go first." He said, "Yeah, thanks." So I towed him across the baths. That was fine. And then it was his turn. And when we got across the other side with me as the patient, the lecturer just laughed and he said, "Well, sir," he said, "you got across the baths, but your poor patient drowned because he was underwater the whole way." Yeah, right. So, but things like
that. Yes, yeah.
Lovely story. Yeah.
Learning, isn't it? It's just learning all the time. Yeah, yeah. So you were at that school for how
one
long?
Year.
1 year.
Yeah, as a probationary. Mm. And the school inspectors came to see you teach.
Mm-hmm.
My inspector never came in. My roomie stood outside the windows and listened. And that seemed to be enough because the following January, I received my certificate.
So that's how you did your training, you know, from teachers' college and then going out into the school. You didn't have a mentor as such. You just had the inspector to come in and say a year later, yeah. Yes, you've got it or you haven't. Okay.
Yeah. So that... once you got your certificate, you were on your own to apply for jobs, right?
Mm.
And I wasn't successful around Whanganui. So in the end, I applied for a job in Thames.
Right.
In July of 1957, and I was appointed there, and off I went in the bus and all the way to Thames.
Yes, yes.
And I had 4.5 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sold me on teaching. Absolutely.
Because?
Well, the kids were pretty well behaved in Thames.
Right.
So I didn't learn much about behaviour.
Mm.
I also learned how to organise because classes were big.
Mm.
When you are a first year teacher, they give you a nice class and they. You're limited to 24 kids. Thames, it was 40.
Wow.
Plus.
What age group?
Oh, well, I went into years 7 and 8, or what we used to call Form 1 and 2.
Yeah.
But they were great kids.
And 40? Yeah. 40, that's 40. A lot.
I tell you what, I learned quick.
Yeah, that's
to organise.
That's a lot of children at that age.
And I hated after school marking 40 books, but that's what you did because everything was talk and chalk and books.
Mm.
You know.
Mm.
My 4.5 years in Thames went so fast because I'm a social person and I played rugby and cricket and basketball and badminton. My nights were full. And then I met a couple of guys who wanted to go overseas who were always teachers, and I'm coming, I said. So we took off for 2 years in the lovely Britain, England. Go to London.
Right.
So we went to London. We arrived in November. Couldn't get a job. No one wanted to employ teachers because of they have a little break over Christmas and New Year and then go back.
Oh, they do too.
And they said, come back in January.
Yes.
And we had no money. We'd run out.
But
luckily, one of the guys, John and Peter, they were both Thames boys.
Mm.
John had a friend who was teaching in Scotland. And he said, I think we can get jobs in Scotland. So off we went to Scotland and we were employed.
Great.
And it turned out that the manager of the education authority, that's how he got orders relieving teachers because there was a shortage in those days, and he'd fly to London and interview people in the Overseas Visitors Club and take them on. And he said, oh, you can stay 1 week, 1 year, whatever you like. We didn't do that because we went straight to Scotland.
Right,
because
right.
Because we wanted to be there to start school on the 3rd of January.
Yes, yes, yeah.
I was appointed to a high school, what was called a secondary modern school. And Brian might correct me that in Scotland they called all those students that passed the 11 plus an academy.
Academy, yeah.
Yeah, mm. And this was called Grange Secondary Modern, so all the kids had failed the 11 plus.
Mm.
My classes were first years, second years and third years.
Mm-hmm.
None of the kids stayed beyond the leaving age.
Mm.
They all wanted to get into jobs.
Mm.
And the first day The principal knocked on my door and asked if I was coming back the next day. And I said, what do you mean? I'd only been here one day. And he said, oh, well, before Christmas, this group of kids had three different teachers. They drove the teachers out.
Wow.
Now, they had me on. They had me on, but it didn't worry me.
Mm.
Like, they had desks with lids that went up and they glued them down with chewing gum. So when I asked to take their books out, can't get our desks up. And I sort of knew what they were up to, so I just... And that's a teacher technique.
Yes, it is.
Is just change everything if you can't get what you want. Mm. So I made a bit of an impression, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I stayed there the whole 2 years.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic for the students too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they obviously saw something in you and related to you. And
yeah, the New Zealand style
of
teaching.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were very formal. Teaching from books and read a passage and I did projects, you know, went to the art department and got paper and pencils and coloured pens and we did colourful projects about the topic and they loved that. The other thing I found out at in Scotland, if you decided to take an extension class after school, they paid you. I was into that.
Yes.
And I took on basketball coaching, and I used to have four classes a week after school, from Monday to Thursday, two in the evening for the older kids and two in the after school, and it went well. It was a great success, and the money was lovely. Helped with the holiday. But a corollary of that was moving on to 14 years later, a very tall 6'6" boy appeared at Aupiki School where I was the principal, and he said, I'm Charlie Sharp, you remember me? And he was one of the basketball boys from
Scotland. Oh, really? From Scotland?
Yeah, because I used to tell him about Whanganui in New Zealand, on the side, and he remembered the name Whanganui, and he went searching for me, and he went to the education authorities in Whanganui, and they were able to send him to Aupiki, and he was heading to Australia with his partner. He was going to work, I think, in gold mining or silver mining.
Right.
But he made the effort
to come and see you. What a huge honour, wasn't it? That really just absolutely showing how much you had connected with them and engaged with them and given something special to them.
You know, the basketball thing was interesting. I think there was only one other club in the school, and it was a photographic club after school. None of the other teachers... One other story about Grange. I arrived in England in October 2 years previously, and I had to leave in 2 years. And I was leaving Grange Secondary School in October, and I had a knock on the door a couple of weeks before I left. The principal again, never even saw him much over 2 years, but that didn't matter. He was a nice guy, and he said, Mr. Chote, I've got a favour to ask you. And I said, oh, yeah, what's that? And he said, you know these third-year boys you take for history and geography? No one in this school has ever taken them out for a field trip. Would I?
Oh.
No problem, I said. What's the story? What about the money? He said, no, all the money?
Yeah.
Will be covered, whatever you want to do, because I thought, oh, they might want to go to the movies. So, being a good New Zealand teacher, I said, look, we're going on a field trip. Here's a piece of paper, write down what you want to do. So they all wrote their notes and handed them in, and I was gobsmacked. I want you to kiss 100% of those boys, there were no girls in this class, and there were 15 of them, all voted for the same thing. F-I-S-H.
Oh, fishing. Fishing. Ah.
They taught me something, these boys. They, on the day, they planned it, and they knew they could catch a bus outside the school. They all came to school with their naps packed, their fishing rods over their shoulder.
They had them.
And they were proud. They were just so proud of themselves that they came to school not in uniform,
yes,
and with fishing rods. So I jumped on the bus with them, and it was all paid for by the school, and off we went. I didn't know where I was going, but they knew. We went to this beautiful little stream, and it was woody.
Yeah.
And they all started fishing. Now, these were naughty boys at school. They shared their lunch with me.
Yeah.
Not a murmur. No one. They fished all day till the time to go back. Never caught a fish, but they didn't care.
No. So the school where you were and the town that you were, was that near the water and the beaches and fishing areas?
No. Well, it was a place called Alawa in Clackmannanshire, and that is on the north bank of the River Forth.
Okay.
But quite a few kilometres away.
Right.
It's nearer to Stirling in Scotland, which has quite a famous castle. But Alawa had coal mines, breweries and distilleries. That's what made it famous. Oh, and glassworks.
Right,
All industry. Okay.
Wow.
And all these boys, that's where they all been working.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Wow, what an impression. Thank you. We'll hear more about this next week.
This is part 1 of 5. Tune in next week for part 2.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.